Hello, I'm Ian Stone. Welcome to the show. Before we begin, can I just say we get it and we have listened. We've had a reset after the international break, made a few tactical tweaks, and we're ready to go again with a renewed sense of focus and purpose. Because the football's on. Yes, you're in the right place and another fun-filled hour awaits. We sincerely hope it's the next one. In the news this week, Bruno Lage has been let go by Wolves. First Nuno, now Bruno. Who knows which Uno will be next? Amongst other things, we'll be talking about how Arsenal, that's right, emotionally fragile, consistently inconsistent, got no cojones Arsenal, are the only team standing between Manchester City and total domination. And we'll be asking our guests how they'll cope with the avalanche of football over the next few months. Well, as they're both comics, I imagine it'll be a welcome relief from existential angst and doom-scrolling social media. Welcome to the show, Elliot Steele and Ivo Graham. Hello, chaps.
Hello, Ian. Hello. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Pleasure, Ivo. What have you noticed this week, Ivo?
Well, I've not so much noticed as greatly anticipated and celebrated in the privacy of my own home the completion of the payment of Swindon Town's historic debentures or debts. Debentures, a word I've only ever heard in conjunction with Swindon Town's economic crises in quite a perilous state of, I think, approximately £8 million. Small fry to you Premier League boys, of course, but not a hole in a lower league pocket you want to see. That's largely apparently been paid off thanks to our Australian chairman, Clem Morfuni. I was about to say something overly sycophantic, and then I actually realised that there's still £1 million worth of debt. We're sort of having a slightly solid but unspectacular mid-table season. And of course, the narrative could spin again. But economically, we're in a good position. We're grateful to our chairman. We're grateful to the Nigel Eady Trust. Let's buy back the ground. It's all good news in SN1.
That was like watching Shakespeare explain football in economics.
hey, Elliot. Hey, we're Premier League clubs. I've got a couple of million quid down the back of the sofa. Do you want to pull it? What about you, Elliot? What have you got for us? What have you noticed?
I have noticed that if football was played to just 84 minutes, Crystal Palace would be top of the league.
Yeah, you do let in a lot of late goals, don't you?
I'm a big fan of this 1 hour game that they're proposing with a clock stop, because it means that some of our players most of our players only play like it's an hour anyway at the moment.
Right. I mean, I do like a late goal, just not against my team, but I understand it's part of the excitement, isn't it? Really, it's why anyone who goes home before the 91st minute can get in the bin.
I've never understood that, leaving the game early. It's the best bit.
No. Not for Palace at the moment. Now, after a delay that felt longer than a summer holiday for a fee-paying school, the Premiership made a comeback, and it was all about the local derbies. Arsenal beat Spurs the Emirates, and we'll get to that. Oh, yes, we will. But we'll start with Manchester City toying with Manchester United to the point where I thought about calling social services. Ivo, we'll get to Erling Haaland in a moment, but do we just have to accept for a while that City are better than everybody else? It's essentially a fitter version of the Phil the Power Taylor era in professional darts.
Yeah, I think that's. I think it's for the best to accept that. If anything, as a sort of neutral who just likes to see a good Premier League title race, it's been more painful to see the seasons of how close last season and then 3 years ago where Liverpool were a sort of second on sort of 98 points, whereas if Man City get 100 points, Erling Haaland scores 100 goals, Dixie Dean's name is written out of the history books forever, and everyone else is about 30 points behind, then you go, well, it was never going to be, you know, it was always going to be Man City's title, so it's almost just, you know, let them just absolutely romp it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, completely.
Some seasons just have to become sort of showcase seasons for excellence. And that's what this one is already. It's a complete write-off.
Yeah.
You know, Arsenal might come second. That'd be very nice. They won't, but it'd be very nice. But, United have rolled over. Liverpool are in an absolutely delicious state. So it's just, it's Man City's world. We're just nodding proudly in it.
Yeah. Elliot, Michael Owen took 48 games to score 3 hat-tricks. Ruud van Nistelrooy, 59. And Luis Suarez, slouch that he is, took 71. Erling Haaland, as has been well documented this week, managed it in 8. Are we witnessing the birth of a generational talent? Is he the Stephen Hawking of strikers, the Picasso of penalty box predators, the Newton of number 9s?
I think he's just got everything that, and we do this as football fans. I said this before. We like to get very excited early on about something, and it'll be interesting to see what the reception will be, whether he does it this season or next season, when he has a little plateau, when he does go 3 or 4 games without scoring. If that happens, what the reception to that will be. But it is terrifying how good he is. And it's the players that he's playing with as well. Like City have finally, for years we've gone, oh, they just need a number 9. And it's like everyone said that, oh, the problem with Pep is he doesn't play a number 9. And now that he's gone, all right, I'll go and get the best number 9 that there's ever been, potentially. And it's like everyone's gone. All right, calm down. Like we just meant.
do your thing with 5 midfielders again. That was good, actually.
Yeah. It's very scary, isn't it?
I did say on this show a few weeks ago that I reckon I could score a couple of goals if Kevin De Bruyne was feeding me with his delicious through balls and all the rest of it. But there is something ridiculous about Haaland. Ivo, when they do the results, should they give Erling Haaland as a separate score? You know, so Man City 3, Erling Haaland 3, Manchester United 3.
That's very true, actually. I think that would be a nice way of isolating him. Or you have to have some sort of swap deal. I would say that Erling Haaland occasionally has to be replaced by other sons of players from Man City's 2001 team. You know, let's put Paolo Wanchope's son up front and see if he can do the biz quite as well. Embarrassed at how much of this morning I spent researching that team and finding out that Richard Dunn is childless. But there we go.
Right. Okay. On the other hand, Elliot, if Foden and Haaland aren't playing, they lose 3-0. I mean, are we reading too much into the influence of a couple of players? Or one player?
I think so.
I think it's one of the most ludicrous things ever said on this show, Ian.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a pretty high bar as well.
We've had 2 weeks off after the international break. Elliot is horizontal on his sofa, clutching a Charles and Diana mug. And you're suggesting that Man City are a two-man team because only 2 players scored for them this weekend.
Well, what's terrifying as well is that Haaland, he's not going to the World Cup. So while everyone else is out there running around in the heat of Doha, he's just going to be on the training ground doing drills with Pep. He's going to absolutely smash that goal record.
Well, to be honest, he already is. He's got 17 in 11 so far, which is utterly ridiculous.
But Ian, but a lot of the Man City team haven't scored any goals. You know, let's remember that as well. Let's break it down on a player-by-player basis. It's just Haaland and Foden, really.
Edison really needs to start pulling his weight.
Yeah, Akanji's got nothing.
Akanji's not done nothing. Where's Ake on the score sheet? I'd be embarrassed about these players.
Meanwhile, in the North London derby, it was Arsenal 3, Tottenham 1 at the Emirates. I'm sorry, you want me to say that again? Okay, it was Arsenal 3, Tottenham 1 at the Emirates. And let the bells ring out, joy to the world. Hark, let the angels sing, for we have risen. Happiness has broken out at the moodiest club in the Premier League. And obviously, I'm enjoying it just as much as you would if it were your club. Personally, I could do the entire show on what happened live on BT Sport on Saturday. But let's talk about the soon-to-be-released art house movie, The Unexpected Redemption of Granit Xhaka, starring Tom Hardy as the newly mature Swiss and Tom Hanks as Arsene Wenger. Ivo, what a story.
I think it is a lovely story. Obviously, you know, Ian, you've been pretty vocal in your anti-Xhaka stance. You know, you chew up players and you spit them out. You wish.
I've grown up, actually, Ivo.
It was when Xhaka went off. Who was it he was swearing at the fans against? Was it Palace?
Palace. Yeah, Palace. It was against Palace.
It was Ian.
Horrible day.
Great day.
If the camera had cut to the crowd, it was actually eye to eye with Ian Stone.
Well, I was swearing back at him as well, let me tell you. I was Who's not happy with that day.
Who's playing Ian Stone in the Granit Xhaka documentary? That's my real question.
I got into his head.
This sort of supervillain character.
But 3 years on, 3 years on to be where he is, player of the month, essentially the captain of the team, even though it's Martin Ødegaard. I mean, it's incredible.
Mm. I'm looking forward to you all turning on him this season when he has his free game. Arsenal fans do this. You write this amazing redemption arc after someone's had a few good games, and then he'll do his inevitable get two yellow cards in the space of 30 seconds for no reason whatsoever. And then you'll all be like, we've got to get this guy out of this club. He's ruining the good name of Arsenal. And then say how Arteta's mastered your dark arts again. And then claim the refs are against you because they keep going, no, you haven't mastered the dark arts. You keep kicking players. That's
Elliot, should we all... I mean, it's interesting what you're saying. I don't believe that will happen. I think this redemption arc will end with Granit Xhaka holding up a major trophy. But... should we all send him? I do. I don't know why that's funny in any way. Elliot, should we all... Switzerland, actually.
So Arsenal.
Elliot, I know, but I am Arsenal. Elliot, should we all send him a big apology card, you know, from all of us at the Emirates and also everyone in the country? Because it wasn't just us who were having a go at him.
Well, yeah, but whenever you watched, especially Xhaka in that Euros for Switzerland, there is a great player inside Xhaka, and he is a really good footballer. And I think he's one of those players, not to say that let me say this, I'm no good at football. I don't really know what I'm talking about most of the time. But he's one of those players that I think when he doesn't do the stuff that makes you as exciting a player to watch. So he would do a lot of that, so he would track back well, would be off the ball, and that's not that exciting. But then he would just every now and then do something silly, and that would get picked up, and he'd Arsenal fans and fans as a whole of the game would disregard all the good that he did in a match because he would do something mental. But that's why he's a great player. I love a player like that who's... Granit Xhaka would be an amazing... would be regarded as one of the best players if he played 15 years ago when you could get away with a lot of that stuff.
Listen, I'm not one to dispute Elliot, who's able to draw on the experience of watching Granit Xhaka for Switzerland. And that's really one to the naysayers who say he doesn't do his work. But isn't it true that even when Xhaka really was at his least popular, he was still pulling out, he would score about one or two incredible goals a season.
Yeah.
Like he's always been a liability who does a worldie occasionally. And now...
when he's on the pitch, he's great. When he's on the pitch, Ivo, but that he kept getting sent off. I mean, Ivo, I want to ask you about Mikel Arteta as well. Is Arsenal Fan TV going to be like one of those religious channels on satellite telly?
Well, Arsenal Fan TV, sadly, now is living in the quite sizable Bezos shadow of the All or Nothing series, which I've jumped aboard because of this new revelation that Mikel Arteta is the world's worst children's illustrator. He does these motivational team talks. Have you seen, he draws like a heart and a brain and they're holding hands. I bought that for my brother. It's on a T-shirt. They're so mad. One game, he pulls out a light bulb. Have you seen this? He says Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, which is a common historical inaccuracy. Put some respect on Joseph Swan's name, and sure, I've just had to glance down at my notes to check his name, so I've not exactly put a lot of respect on it myself. But I think also they lost the game against Brighton that he pulled out the light bulb in front of, so there's not really any correlation between the motivation and the results. But it is working this season. You have beaten a lot of mid-table teams with considerable ease. So, you know, the process is getting trusted.
Well, Elliot, I'll ask you then as well, because you had a go at Mikel Arteta. I can't remember exactly what you called him in the last show, possibly a haircut in a suit or something like that. Are you coming round to the fact that he might be one of the greatest managers of all time?
I don't think he's a bad manager at all, but that All or Nothing series, it was insane. Because the managers get a big say on what gets left in. And then he left all of those speeches in. And it was just someone attempting to do it. It was just, it's just like a BTEC version of Pep Guardiola. It was, that's what it was. He was just attempting to be Pep Guardiola. You know when you see a comedian who's gone on tour and done tour support with someone, and then they come back on the circuit and they do an impression of that comedian? That's what Mikel Arteta is to Pep Guardiola. Yeah. It's just a Pep, but he's got the team playing well. He's, you know, there's no denying that. But you will crumble. It is Arsenal. You play Saka all the time. He will get injured because he's being overused and he's going to run out of energy. And then the team will collapse and you'll all turn on each other and start fighting. And that's what you do. That is why everyone loves Arsenal.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got that on tape. We'll keep that for when you come on in April and we're 5 points clear. Anyway, that's in second place, obviously, behind Man City, who will be 100 points clear. The Football's On with Ivo Graham, Elliot Steele and me, Ian Stone. Now, I never thought I'd say the following sentence, but is there just a bit too much football? A Winter World Cup has meant that all the domestic and European fixture lists have been compressed, so that from now until June, we have a month of non-stop football, followed by another month of non-stop football, and then 6 months of non-stop football. Elliot, we wanted some tips on how to survive this period while retaining your sanity and some level of physical fitness. Any ideas?
Yeah, I think obviously this amount of football does remind me of inflation in the Weimar Republic of 1925.
And it's never far from your mind, the old Weimar, is it, Elliot?
It's my go-to reference on anything.
It's a go-to. So what do you mean, Elliot?
Well, there's just when there's too much of something, it all becomes a bit pointless. It overinflates the market. Not that this country would know anything about that at the moment, but that's what it. That's what it is, and that's why I think the government at the moment are banking. Like, this government need England to win the World Cup, because I know the English public. We will forget everything else that's going on. We will forget that we are freezing in our homes because we're able to sing "It's Coming Home." That is this nation. People think there's going to be civil unrest in the streets, but as long as we don't go out in the group stages, the government buy themselves a few weeks.
Snap election, early January, after Harry Kane lifts the World Cup. Do you know what? It wouldn't be the worst idea.
No, could you imagine, like, the uproar if we lose to Iran and America and then Wales and we can't afford to heat our homes? There will be an actual revolution.
They should obviously change the song to "It's Coming Home to a Freezing Cold Flat" then, really, essentially. Ivo, would getting up from the sofa when there's a stoppage work? I mean, going back to the physical fitness, every time there's a VAR break in play, take the dog for a long walk?
Well, we're all trying to juggle it with our personal lives. And I think, to be fair, Kwasi Kwarteng has done a U-turn on Leeds versus Aston Villa being described as a Super Sunday match. So that's something, at least. During the big one, I was at a soft play centre in Brentford on Sunday afternoon during the Manchester derby. And my friend Julian, obviously, and I, we decided we would take it in turns to look after our collective three children while the other one watched bits of the match on the phone. And I scored big because I was looking after them during the sort of basically crawling through tunnels bit of a soft play where it's basically impossible to injure yourself. He had to take quite a tricky turn looking after them on the monkey bars while I watched three Man City goals. So I'm juggling it very well. But ultimately, it's about deciding what you've got space for in your life. And there is too much football and you have to have lines and limitations. For me, it's one full game per weekend, one Match of the Day highlights package, one Gary Neville rant on Monday, and half an hour on my Fantasy Premier League team before the deadline. No looking at it earlier in the week. That is pure wasted time. You can sub in a Guardian 10 Things We Learnt This Week article for the Gary Neville rant if you think that will help you more in the pub chats in the week ahead.
Elliot, I love the way he's thought about it. What about personal relationships? I mean, Ivo mentioned there. How do you ensure that marital harmony with your non-football loving partner is maintained when you're watching your fourth match of the day? I mean, would it be easier possibly to have a trial separation until just before Christmas?
I definitely think so. I had an absolute touch this weekend that I was doing this show because I was down at my girlfriend's parents and then had to tell them, I'm actually doing a TV show where I'm a pundit on football. So I am going to need. I am going to need to watch Leeds versus Aston Villa or whoever.
You're welcome. We're not even talking about that game.
And then this evening, I'm watching this documentary about the Weimar Republic. Also very important is my reference point.
I mean, it's interesting though because there are a lot of games. The World Cup on the 26th of November. There are four games: Tunisia versus Australia at 10, Poland v Saudi Arabia at 1. France, Denmark at 4 and Argentina v Mexico at 7. I mean, I have to say, Ivo, if you're prepared to miss work to watch Tunisia against Australia at 10 a.m, I salute you. Could you do all four?
I could do all four. I mean, I've just booked in a run of London dates which clash with two of the England games. So I've not played a blinder when
doing?
It's come to World Cup preparation. If anything,
why isn't it in your diary?
It was in the diary, but I had to make some difficult decisions based on priorities and finances. And unfortunately, as ever, Iran was the loser. If you want to sack off,
I've got them
little...
in my diary in different colours. I've got them in one colour if England get through first in the group, and another colour if they get through second. So it's less likely, but one has to think of these things in advance. I mean, I guess the other thing to say is all this football may play havoc with work and sleep, but football fans can console themselves, Elliot, with the knowledge they'll never miss another Amazon delivery. It's also the cost of playing all the games, isn't it? Some of the smaller clubs, I read this, wanted to move games to earlier so they wouldn't have to put on their floodlights and they could save on electricity. I mean, in fact, Ivo, have Swindon done this?
It's been debated. I don't think it is happening as it currently stands, but I look forward to hearing what the glitterati of the Premier League think about lower league teams trying to save a few quid on their energy bills.
Well, Elliot, it does remind me of the Weimar Republic, doesn't it, really? I mean, it's redolent, well, I would say.
What doesn't nowadays?
Time.
History repeats itself, Ian.
Any other money-saving tips for teams?
I love that you're asking me. I'm not the chairman of a football club. This is what,
are you not?
I once played a football chairman, an app on my phone, which was meant to be like Football Manager, but without all the exciting bit where you then become a chairman of a club. And there was not a single save where I hadn't run a team into bankruptcy and liquidation. threatening the Conference South.
I'm just wondering, Ivo, what football chairman the game would entail. I mean, well, not another drinks reception in the boardroom after a defeat. I mean, it's a very strange concept for a game.
Well, we had this thing when Swindon got a new chairman last summer, and it was obviously a big thing because, obviously, you'll have all followed the changes in chairmanship over at Swindon Town. The previous chairman had been hugely unpopular, so the new one had to do very little other than just not be him. But he turned up, and I don't know how many of these were options on your game, Elliot. Number one, he turned up at a pre-season friendly wearing a Swindon Town limited edition bucket hat. Tick. number two, he drove around Swindon Town Centre in a massive truck giving out season tickets, or at least pretending to. Tick. And number three, he played in a local cricket match, despite that having absolutely no relevance to his job or the team whatsoever. Big tick. Big fan, yes, of our cricket-playing, truck-driving, bucket-hat-wearing Australian plumbing magnate of a chairman. Go straight to the Emirates. Do not pass Championship or League One.
I mean, Elliot, if that was an option on the game, you'd have done that, wouldn't
you? Oh, absolutely.
A cricket match, of course.
I'm gutted that Newcastle's owners haven't done that. All they had to do is go, we're going to build a shipyard and bring Newcastle back, and then have no plans whatsoever when quizzed on it, and all of Newcastle ended up turning up in full Saudi Arabian gear the next day.
Here we go again.
We know
here
which
come
team's
the tweets.
Fans. Yes, we know which team's fans will be bothering Elliot this week.
I'm not going to do that joke. Right, it won't make it to air.
You can No. Every week. Let's move on. Every week, a BT Sport pundit takes us through their trio of tremendousness. That is, the best three teams, in their opinion, to have graced the Premier League. This week, it's Robbie Savage.
At number three, Pep Guardiola's Manchester City team, the team that got 100 points, the way they've changed football, playing out from the back, the amount of goals they've scored. So at number three, 17-18 Man City side. Number two, I'm going to go for Manchester United, 98-99. Quite incredible, the players they had. I was fortunate enough to play against that side. What a team it was. And at number one, I'm going to go 97-98 Arsenal side. What a team. Not the invincible side, but what a team it was. The toughest team I've ever played against. What a team.
Yeah, I mean, briefly, Man City 17-18. Ivo, 100 points. There was obviously something relentless about that team, but do you not think there's also something a bit yeah about the whole thing? Seeing as, you know, that was when the money really started to kick in.
Well, exactly. And also, you know, after a certain amount of records, you just become a bit exhausted. And we may find that with Haaland this season. I remember at the end of the 18 season, Man City put up this big graphic of all the records they'd broken in a Premier League season. And one of them was Nicolas Otamendi, most outfield passes ever recorded in a season. So for me, 2018 will always be the year of Otamendi, just playing it across his back four. Solid but unspectacular. And I'm amazed that Robbie didn't bring it up, to be honest.
No. It was at the forefront of all our minds. Elliot, Man United 98-99, the treble, lost quite a few games that season. That was also, by the way, the year David Beckham had been sent off against Argentina, and they were burning effigies of him and singing rude songs about his wife's sexual preferences. And he has a season when he wins the treble.
Yeah, I was free, so I don't remember any of that.
You still burnt the odd effigy, though, didn't you, Elliot? Come on.
I was there, but I didn't quite get why we were doing it. But it was a fun day out.
It was.
The moth to a flame. The three-year-old Elliot Steele sees an effigy. He's going to burn it. He doesn't even know the context.
No.
And Ivo, what about 97-98 Arsenal? I mean, that was basically the first great Wenger team.
Yeah.
Adding Nicolas Anelka, Mark Overmars and Patrick Vieira to the famous back five. That is a tough team.
Pop Christopher Wray into the equation, if you'd be so kind, Ian. Thank you very much.
Do you know, they gave us a song sheet once at a cup final. I think it was the 98 cup final. And each of the players had a song. And Christopher Wray was basically to the tune of Whip Crack Away from the musical. I think it was not Carousel. Annie, Get Your Gun or something. Christopher Wray. And we all had to sing the song. Absolute nonsense. Everyone, honestly, we all got these song sheets and we're looking at each other going, what? We're not singing that. Oh, the other one, which I remember from that time, was If I Was a Rich Man, was If I Was Lee Dixon.
Amazing.
I know.
It's a rich, really it's a rich tradition, Ian, from the Christopher Wray song. And now you've got Saliba. So it's, you know, the good times have never dried up.
Of course. Oh, yes, they have. A little game of Who Am I? I give out three clues and the guests have to work out who I'm on about. I think you'll get this one quite easily. Who am I? I have scored 9 goals in Manchester derbies.
Erling Haaland?
No, it's not Erling Haaland. I was the 2007 Golden Boy, just for clarification. We're not talking about me at this point. Clue three, I won the Copa America and retired in the same year. Any thoughts as to who I might be talking about? You better get it right, by the way.
I believe it was Carlos Tevez, Ian.
It's Sergio Aguero, mate. Ivo, you'd have got that, wouldn't you?
Of course I would. It was staring him right in the face.
I know. I was going to give you extra clues if you needed, but no need. No need. Well, there was need for Elliot, in fact, but Ivo would have got that. Sorry, I was so excited, Ivo, that he got it wrong that I gave him the answer without letting you guess. But I think you knew that one.
I think there's sufficient trust for me on this programme that people will be nodding along and going, Graham had that in the locker.
Anyway, it has been widely reported that Paul Pogba's brother, Matthias Pogba, has been arrested and charged with allegedly trying to blackmail the Juventus midfielder. Now, we're not getting into talking about an active court case, but Ivo, Christmas dinner round the Pogbas will be a tense affair, will it not?
Of course it will be a tense affair. I feel for Matthias Pogba. You know, it's not easy to live in that kind of shadow. He is the Jim Hanks of the football world.
Did you make that up? Sorry. No, did you make that up, or is it Tom Hanks' brother?
Jim Hanks is Tom Hanks' brother. He was his body double in Forrest Gump, and occasionally provided the voice of Woody in Toy Story. What a sad career to have to be the sort of
I love that you know that.
To be the stand-in for your brother on specifically their roles. At least Matthias has been carving out an independent career for himself at Wrexham, Crewe, and Partick Thistle. But now the games at Partick Thistle have dried up, and he's had to resort, as we all do eventually, to witchcraft. And he hasn't. Paul's been doing the witchcraft, and Matthias has been doing blackmail.
Well,
I spent so long reading about Jim Hanks, I lost track of the Pogba story, to be honest.
Well, hang on, let's get it right. Matthias Pogba has alleged that his superstar brother Paul hired a marabou, which is an African mystic called Ibrahim the Great, to put a spell on Kylian Mbappe when United played PSG in 2019. Paul Pogba said it was to try and cure a persistent groin strain. Elliot, I'm not about to slag off Ibrahim the Great on national telly, you know, just in case. if I'm paying Paul 200 grand a week, surely I'd be encouraging him to seek out other sports science-based treatment that will help with his persistent muscular injuries.
Yeah, I mean, at what point does he go, I've tried everything else? So they've done the ice pack, they've done the physiotherapy. And then
it's going to have to be Ibrahim.
It's going to have to be Ibrahim the Great. Not just any Ibrahim, the great Ibrahim.
It's a bit presumptuous, isn't it, by the way? Don't you think it's a little bit presumptuous, Elliot? That, you know, Ibrahim the Great. I mean, it's like, we'll be the judge of that, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right, though, Elliot. You're right. He obviously has tried a lot of things, and he just thought, well, I'll try something a bit alternative. And there's nothing much more alternative than Ibrahim the Great.
Also, is this the best use of Ibrahim the Great? You know, surely, could we not get him to sort out the cost of living crisis, or go back in time and stop Nicolas Otamendi playing so many passes in the 2018 season? so many things he could.
Well, I was going to ask you, Ivo, if there was a mystic. If there was a mystic that could cast a spell on Graham Souness, Paul Pogba would be right into it, right?
That's absolutely ideal, actually. Mm. Even then, Souness is his last words were to claim that the mystic had been, you know, sort of preening or something.
Elliot, when the police are doing an investigation into a football-related crime and they have CCTV footage, do they call the detective over to take another look at the monitor?
That's a very good joke, Ian.
Thank you. All right, let's talk about the Women's Champions League qualifier. Arsenal beat Ajax 1-0 to progress to the group stages. But before the game, the Arsenal boss, Jonas Eidevall, was a bit perturbed to find that the goals in Amsterdam were smaller than those used by Arsenal in their games in England. There was nothing nefarious about it. Dutch Women's League games play with goals where the height is 10 centimetres less than that of their English counterparts. For my dad who watches this show, that is just under 4 inches. Elliot, isn't that the most sensible thing? I mean, in women's football, size clearly matters. You get very few women goalkeepers who are 6'5".
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. But for the sake of getting all the tweets, I don't think you should be asking me about this issue. Because there is no way I'm going to stray into this delicately, is there? Or even if I do... By the way, even if I do stray into the subject delicately of women's football and make an absolutely fine point, it's still going to result in all of us doing an apology, including Ivo, who's just here by proxy, just because he was here and didn't stop any of us going, yeah, no, that makes sense when most people are 5'6", lower the goal. And then Ivo will also be dragged into it. But yes, it makes a lot of sense.
I'm wearing an orange jumper in solidarity with the Dutch women that Elliot abuses on this show every single week. To be honest, it sounds like a perfectly practical decision made in a very admirable country with a lot of laws that would be the envy of us here in a bloody British nanny state. I say fair play to the Dutch and their smaller goals.
Yes. I mean, I do like the idea, Ivo, of teams having to learn how to cope with the quirks in the way football is played in different countries. You know, if you've got an Albanian team in the Europa Conference League and it turned out they play 14 players in their games or you've got a cup tie in Kazakhstan. Oh, make sure you practice shooting with a square goal and two goalkeepers.
It's nice, Ian, that you haven't let the vertigo of being top of the league go to your head, and you still know that ultimately you're going to be playing an Albanian team in the Europa Conference League pretty soon.
And I'll take that. I won't take it now. At this point, I want something a bit better. But you get the point, right? It's nice. I like the little quirks in different places. We can move off of women's football now, Elliot. You can breathe out. I like that you did that. All right. Yeah. Now it's time for Call Yourself a Fan. This is the quiz that tests our guest knowledge of the beautiful game. We are keeping a league table there. Look at that. Lloyd Griffiths, Nathan Caton and Mark Simmons doing very, very nicely. Elliot still halfway. Ivo, you're yet to trouble the scorer, okay? But anyway, you get first go on this, all right? So, on FIFA 23, Ivo, which of these Swindon players is rated highest? Is it A, Jonathan Williams, B, Louis Reed, or C, Ellis Landolo?
It's Ian Dolo, but that's a technicality, and you have my sympathies. It's a strange old surname.
Oh, my God. Sorry about that, Ellis. Anyway, who is it?
Well, obviously, Ian, you and everyone at home is absolutely desperate for me to say Wales international Johnny Williams. But I'm going to upset things by saying that it's actually our central midfield linchpin, though he's been a little bit out of form this season, Louis Reed.
It is. Louis Reed is rated 65.
That was a fantastic question.
It's a good question. This club's joint highest rated player alongside Angus McDonald and Luke Jeffcott. Wow, 1-1 to Ivo. Okay, Ivo, question two. Who scored Swindon's first league goal of the season? Was it Matthew Bowdrey, Harry McCurdy, or Jacob Wakeling?
It was Jacob Wakeling.
Yes, he knows his stuff, doesn't he? Found the net in the Robins' third game of their League Two campaign. You didn't score for the first two, no? Okay. In a 1-1 draw away at Carlisle.
I saw it. I was there.
2 points for Ivo. Sailing along very, very nicely. Okay, question three. Do you know, this is something I didn't know about a man who was pivotal in our club. Herbert Chapman played 3 times for Swindon Town. But how many goals did he score? Did he score 2, 4, or 6, Ivo?
Finally, the big Chapman question. It's wheat from the chaff time. I'm going to say he scored 2 goals.
He did. He got 2. Chapman scored twice in 3 appearances before having to leave the club as he couldn't find a job in the local area.
I know the feeling.
I have to say, I had no idea. I was walking past the statue of a former Swindon player every time I go to the Emirates. I would enjoy that walk next time, Ivo. 3 out of 3, Ivo. Very, very good. Couple on this weekend's action. Question 4. Who was sent off for Fulham in their embarrassing home defeat to Newcastle? Was it Tosin Adarabayo, Nathaniel Chalobah, or Harrison Reed?
Nathaniel Chalobah.
Yeah, what a terrible tackle that was. Red card in the 8th minute at Craven Cottage. Would you even bother taking a shower after 8 minutes? You think, oh, I can wear this shirt again.
Let's skip the whimsy and get me top of that leaderboard.
Well, 4. You are there. And by the way, no one has got 5 yet. This is a big moment in the football zone. Ivo, who was the only Premier League manager to be booked this weekend? Was it Patrick Vieira, Jesse Marsh, or Ralph Hasenhüttl?
I don't know that, so I think I may have to settle for just sitting level with Lloyd Griffith. But given that it was quite a card-heavy game, I'm going to say Jesse Marsh.
No, he'd been sent off. He was in the stands. It was Patrick Vieira, shown a yellow card at Selhurst Park as the Eagles lost to a late winner. Sorry, Elliot. From Conor Gallagher. He was sort of smirking, really. You know, oh, that's what football does to you. Anyway, Ivo scored 4 points. 4. He is joint top. Well, not much point, but we'll do it anyway. It's Elliot's turn.
I was really rooting for you there, Ivo. I was very envious as well. Very envious.
Hey, you never know, Elliot. We got some it's Palace questions. It's all right. You ready?
Yes. Yes, I am, Ian.
Okay. Elliot, who is Crystal Palace's lowest rated player on FIFA 23? Is it A, Nathan Ferguson, B, Malcolm Ebiowe, or C, Jack Wells-Morrison?
Jack Wells-Morrison, I'm going to say.
It is. You're right. 18-year-old Jack Wells-Morrison is rated 57. I would love to know my rating at this point. I don't know how they work it out. I'm sort of low 20s, perhaps. I don't know. Well, it would you not be interested?
That would be great. I would pay so much for someone from the FIFA games to come to Comedians Football for a couple of weeks and give us all the ratings at the end.
Just watch. Give us a rating. A friend of ours, John Fothergill, who I believe has done videos for this show in the past, he managed to get a very good likeness of himself onto one of the FIFAs. And so I'm watching a game where Arsenal are playing Newcastle, and then the Newcastle centre-forward is a slightly overweight, ginger-haired Geordie chap who barrels his way through and buries one in the bottom corner. It was absolutely fantastic to look at. Anyway, if FIFA would like to do that, we'd love to see. I'd love to know what my rating is.
Oh, that'd be great.
Minus what? Anyway, question two. In which season, Elliot, did Crystal Palace score the fewest league goals? Was it 16-17? 18-19 or
19-20? Ooh, okay. I'm going to need a few seconds to think about that because I'm trying to work out when did Roy Hodgson take over?
Yeah. That is really it, isn't it?
I'm going to say it was the 16-17 season.
No, it was 1920. 1920, Palace scored just 31 goals in 38 Premier League games, still managing to finish 14th. For comparison, Erling Haaland should pass that number before the World Cup starts in November. Just by the way,
how many passes from open play did we make that season?
Exactly. That's the real stat.
that's the stat yes. We all care about.
Okay, well, question three. How many passes from open play did Crystal Palace make in the 20? That's a joke. Question three. Which of these players has the most appearances for all Crystal Palace? Is it Will Zaha, Julian Speroni, or Nigel Martin?
Ooh. I'm gonna go with Speroni.
Nice. Wilf, mate. Wilf has played 436 times for Palace, and that figure is still rising.
He's wanted to leave.
It's Wilf Zaha. He has wanted to leave for quite a few seasons, but as it turns out, he's still there and he's making more and more appearances. Yeah, 436 and still going.
We do have a very toxic relationship with Zaha, don't we? Where he has, for several years, said he's leaving. And then every night appears to come back and we just never speak of it again.
Yeah, that's right. As he walks in the dressing room, still here, are we, Will?
Yeah, it's true.
I thought you were going
to your mother's.
It's always great when your record player, appearance holder sort of is your begrudging record appearance holder. I didn't want to be in these history books.
That is true.
It's very Crystal Palace that our best ever player doesn't really like us at all. The same with Ian Wright, who just always tries to write that he's played from us from the history books.
Well, there are particular reasons for that, but we won't go into them right now. Question four, only one out of three at the moment. Question four, this is the weekend's action, Elliot. Bournemouth drew 0-0 at home to Brentford on Saturday. It was nailed on to be the last game on Match of the Day. That is their second ball draw of the season. Who was their first 0-0 against? Was it against Villa, Wolves or Newcastle?
I'm going to say Wolves.
Yeah, that's good actually. Wolves, who have scored three goals in the entire season. Wolves had 17 shots at the Vitality, but only took a point on their travel. Two out of four. And the last one, who was sent off for Leeds in their draw against Aston Villa on Sunday? Was it Mark Rocca, Crescencio Somerville or Luis Sinisterra?
Sinisterra.
Yeah, it was Sinisterra. Just the most ridiculous. Two yellows at Elland Road, forcing the home side to settle for a point. Really one of the thicker red cards I've ever seen in a while. Genuinely. When you've been booked, don't stand in front of the ball and put your leg up. I mean, really.
This quiz is basically just a way for you to sort of like have some gripes about the unprofessionalism of players who got sent off on the weekend. That's what it really is. Get those early questions out of the way.
It is.
Talk about a player who really let himself down this weekend.
You're not wrong. Ivo, this is my entire football persona. If you sat next to me at Arsenal, this is what it's like. Oh, why do you give away a free kick there?
Well, that's ridiculous. That's why your Xhaka rants were so iconic. You know, yeah. You take the curmudgeonliness of Stone and the recklessness of Xhaka, you've got AFTV gold.
Perfect. Not that I'd appear on there. Elliot scored 3 out of 5. An excellent, excellent attempt. But obviously, with Ivo Graham in the form that he's in, goes straight to joint top of the table. We don't have any sort of goal difference, any way of
you can't compete with Graham. He's got so many, so knowledgeable.
Yeah.
He's just, listen, that education gave him, he can really retain information. It's very, very impressive.
We did a whole term at Eton on Herbert Chapman's time at Swindon. And that money was not wasted.
An individual tutor lesson. That's it for the Football's On. Many thanks to Ivo Graham, Elliot Steele, and thank you for watching. See you next week.